Come to me tonight, I gotta need you anyway.
Baby, I just wanna be around you all the time, gotta need you. Oh.
I'm running out scared tonight.
Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 31st edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Tarlan Hamadov. He's from Baku, Azerbaijan, which is a country of 9.5 million people on the Caspian Sea and its neighbors with Iran, Armenia, Georgia, Turkey, and the Russian Federation. Azerbaijan is an oil-rich nation, which was formerly part of the Soviet Union and has been independent since 1991. Tarlan and his wife came to Maine in 2001 to visit her family and moved here themselves soon thereafter. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Tarlan.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on this beautiful Sunday.
It is. It's a beautiful day, and we are so happy having again summer for the last 2 days.
So true, a little bit of summer left. I imagine you don't run into too many people who have a lot of working knowledge of Azerbaijan here in Maine, and I wonder what you wish everyone understood about your country of origin.
It's a very old country in the world. It's one of the cradle of the nations or the civilization. So it's this beautiful small country on the Caucasus with a very rich resources of the oil and gas. And we are one of the first Muslim countries in the world, which have the theater, parliament, the republic that was built in 1918. And it's a new modern country, which is developing so rapidly in that part of the world.
Yes, that song that we played starting there was from Eurovision.
Yes, it is.
And so you all are the new Eurovision winners.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. In 2011, our country became a winner of this wonderful song contest in Europe. And in 2012, we've been hosting the whole countries from Europe. And that was really amazing performance of our singers and also the art. And it was really beautifully done. And it was really written everywhere about this amazing contest in our city.
And Azerbaijan's kind of on the edge of Europe and kind of on the edge of Asia, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And the Caucasus Mountains divide
those
two places.
Yeah, we are between Europe and Asia, and we are symbolizing both rich cultures of this civilization. And we are so proud to be, our ancestor being from this part of the world, which is also a part of the Silk Way. You have heard about that.
Sure. Sure. And part of the modern future in that you're also going to be the hosts coming up soon for the European Olympic Games. Is that right?
Yeah, it will be the first in the history.
I didn't even know that was happening. And then I saw it after we'd spoken about it. I saw it online.
Year.
They're building a big stadium, getting ready to go.
Yes, yes, yes. And our government are really working a lot on promulgating the modern Azerbaijan and become a touristic place. And so they are building a lot of nice stadiums and, Olympic, the arenas and etc.
I think if I were going to go to Azerbaijan, based on what I've learned on my very modest study of it, I would go see the mud volcanoes.
Yes, it is. it's an amazing place.
I heard it was considered for one of the new 7 wonders of the world.
Yes, it is. And, it's really famous for centuries. And actually, land has been always amazed by many, many people who was lived long time ago in the history, like Greater Alexander or Persian kings, Rome imperators, and so many, and even Russian imperators. They've been really always amazed by this beautiful country and the resources that we have.
I think it looked like a little bit drier version of our Rocky Mountains. up in the Caucasus Mountains from what I could see.
Maybe.
So, did you grow up in Baku?
Yes.
And then what was that like growing up there in the 70s and 80s? When you were Soviet Union?
It was a really interesting time of my life. Baku was always an international city with so many people living in a brotherhood. So we never been, you know, dividing ourselves between Christian, Muslims, or any other religion or any other nation. So we living in a, as a family. So the neighborhood, you know, the value of being a good neighbor, a good friend was always highly appreciated in that country. And also the respect to our elders. It is just really amazing. And my childhood always been, you know, with my family, with my friends. So we have our summer house in the Caspian Sea. So we've been always playing with our neighbor kids. And it was really a good time of my life.
When you say respect for elders was a remarkable note about your community, what did that look like?
Just example, when you go inside of the bus and the public bus, we were using a lot of public bus still right now, same things. Always the young, whoever was sitting, they've been always get up and give the place for the elder or woman or anyone who is, the specialist man was always respecting. Or any problems in the family, I remember that always elders can come up together and deal with this issue. So they've been always suggesting to the young how to build their family life. So divorces was not appreciated in the community. Today's date is really not an easy days because Western culture are so much influencing us, and we are kind of losing this our this connection with our past,
mm-hmm.
which is not always. I hope I see this as a good things. I think the values of the family should be always high. We have to really understand that's what always connect us with our past.
And growing up in a rather international city, I wonder if it was customary for people to know seven languages.
I mean, at least people would know few languages. I mean, two languages always was, you know, the Russian, Azerbaijani, and so many people were learning German, English, Persian. So Arabic is also because people are Muslims, so they would read, you know, the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in 70s, 80s, we were not practicing like Islam as we practicing today or any other religion. But our elders, actually, they knew Arabic, so they would read Qurans and, you know, teach the children about Islam.
In a subversive way? And when you were a kid, when you were in the USSR or
yes.
openly?
Yeah. It was not like we go to the openly to the mosque, but, you know, in the households, that's what how the families preserve their entity.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandmother, I never forget, she was always reading for us Qurans, or, you know, she was praying, you know, but it was not a, you know, easy time.
So are you a little bit different in that you know seven languages? It seems like a lot, even by the international standards.
You know, it's just my maybe talent, but also I love to learn languages, and it's easy for me. Just if you know like two or three languages, that's the next language is much easier to learn.
That's good, because if they're all as hard as the first, we wouldn't get very far.
And you know, it's just amazing. As much as you start learning languages, you see so much similarities. So much that's the same words could meaning the same meaning in another language. Like between Persian and Russian, I'm learning so much identical words.
That's interesting.
And
isn't
it comes to also, yes, and because they are part of the Indo-European, you know, languages. Same things between Turkish and Azeri and Kazakh or Turkmen or Turkoman. So they're all languages near to each other. So or Uyghur language, which is in China. So they are so similar.
Hmm. That is interesting. Can you tell us about some of the traditional foods and cooking practices from Azerbaijan?
Okay. Azerbaijanis, they like to cook and eat. And hospitality is one of our national kind of entity. We are so happy to see always guests in our homes. And it's just traditionally, it's we believe and we call that any guest is a friend of God. So we have to, you know, well respect them and put on the table the best food. So I remember from my also childhood, that's just my grandmother was always keeping for the guest the best, like candies or, you know, something that was not like able to buy every day. Mm-hmm. So, and she was always keeping this for, you know, for the guest who comes to home, and, you know, always it was on table. So our traditional food is, of course, it's a very mixed of a different region where we are living. But in Baku, which is very cosmopolitan, we have a lot of Russian, traditional Azerbaijani food. And, you know, of course, it's oriental foods. Like pilaf is very known, and kebabs, and we have the best kebabs in that region. So we do kebabs from chicken, from, of course, meats, and, of course, from the sturgeon. Oh. That's one of the famous Caspian, you know, the sea product, as you know, the caviar. And it was always, you know, the best food on the table.
You could do little caviars and toothpicks and make little kebabs.
No, no, no. The caviar is always eaten by the bread and with the butter, but the fish itself, you know, the fish
sturgeon.
Kebab.
Yeah, sure,
it's just amazing. And also our authentic foods, like different meats and chicken, how we cook, which supplies pilaf. So pilaf could be a different variety. So it's hundreds of varieties of pilaf itself, or different, you know, cookies. So we have so many different, you know, the cuisines that is just really compile our cuisine in our country. It's just a different, you know, like products that can be used, and very mild ingredients like spices. So we don't have it a very hot, spicy food. It's very mild.
More like the mint and the...
Yes, cardamom, yes, this kind of... So it's not like... And also we use a lot of turmeric, saffron, and this kind of...
Sounds delicious.
Yes.
How long do your guests usually stay for?
In the past, actually, it's interesting. If you know the French writer... Alexandre Dumas, he was visiting Azerbaijan in 18th century. In one of his writings, it's written that when he was visiting Karabakh, which is the center of Azerbaijan, and Karabakh's Khan or landlords, he was a guest of them. So they were serving him the food, and he was saying that he started to count. It was about 250 different food on the table. Only for one night. So, and mostly, you know, in the past, you know, they were staying 7 nights and 7 days. Same like a weddings also, but for a long time. But now, you know, at least, you know, when we have friends who are visiting us, at least 3-4 hours, we have dinner or lunch or something like that.
I think it sounds like a wonderful place to visit.
Yes, yes. You are welcome to visit next year.
Oh, thank you. That sounds delightful. You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you are just joining us, welcome. Today I'm visiting with Tarlan Hamadov, who is originally from Azerbaijan and now lives here in Maine. He works for Catholic Charities of Maine as the Director of Refugee and Immigrant Services. Tarlan, can you give us a quick overview of the history of refugee resettlement here in Maine and what that looks like today?
So the Refugee Immigration Services program started with the Catholic Charities about 1975. So that was a kind of a response of the Catholic Charities of Maine to the national call when the surge of Amerasians, Vietnamese and Cambodian refugees started to come to United States. So the whole program started to build in the 1980s, the same time when the Act for Refugees had been adopted by the Congress. And it was just so much developing and growing. But as you understand, the refugee itself, the process, it was changing the scale of who are coming here. For example, 90s, it was famous with the collapse of the Soviet Union. So the people of Soviet Union, they've been coming here. So we were serving that time. So there was also war in Iraq, the first war of Iraq. So Iraq is they also been our clients. Then we have been serving the former Yugoslavians here, Kosovars, and the people from Serbia and from Bosnia and other part of the of this country. Then Somalis and then Africans. So, and it's just changing all the time. For example, for the last few years, we are serving in Iraqis, you know, Iraqi refugees. The next years, we are planning to serve Syrians and people from Congo. So this is kind of always evolving and, you know, it's like developing. It was, of course, after 9/11, the refugee resettlement was kind of in crisis because the whole processing was kind of slowed down and we didn't have kind of high numbers of refugees. But for the last few years, specifically last 2 years, we've been really meeting our all quotas and, you know, the proposed numbers.
And what do we get a year in Maine? Because Catholic Charities is the only refugee resettlement program in Maine. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so how many are we seeing a year?
So our proposal for fiscal year 13 was 300 or 275. We met last year 366 refugees. And we resettled them for fiscal year 14, which is just will be kind of done in 2 days. We have been proposed about 300, and then it was reapproved for 400, and we're going to be seeing about 421 refugees who was resettled in all state of Maine, which is include Portland, Greater Portland area, Lewis and Auburn area, Augusta, and Bangor.
Does this include the number for asylum seekers?
No, we are talking about the primary refugees who has been proposed to be resettled in the United States. So we know they're coming from overseas directly to Maine.
So we're getting about 300 to 400 a year in Maine of refugees.
Yes,
coming
correct.
From war-torn or earth-shaken communities.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And I understand many are coming from Syria soon.
Hopefully. That's what our hope, and we are ready to resettle these refugees here.
So as the director of RIS, or Refugee and Immigrant Services, you oversee a number of programs, don't you?
Yeah.
Case management, corporate
yes.
training, elder services, employment services, interpretation and translation services, and a mentoring program. And I wonder if we could highlight two of those programs today that our listeners might actually be able to get involved with. The program called American Friends and the mentoring program.
That's really good. So I love both these programs because these both programs is created by our own program. It is not federally kind of funded. It is mostly our initiatives. And it was, for example, American Friends has been here for a long time. So it's supplemental services for the refugee resettlement, helping the refugees to well integrated to the community they are and kind of creating the welcoming environment for them. So the American program, American Friend program, restarted last year in 2014, January, and up to date we were able to match 15 families with 15 kind of friends. So the whole idea is helping refugees to be tutored in English, to apply for the jobs, you know, if they want, and going around the city, seeing you know the museums, you know, galleries, and going to community events, learning American customs and traditions, and also kind of to find out different cultural practices. But this is not only one way. Kind of American Friend comes and teaches. It's also kind of when the refugees also teaching their own values to the American friends. It's like exchange of the cultural norms and traditions and values, and it's really empowering both parts. For example, we have like a family of five, the mother with her daughters who came here from the war zone, and we match her with one of the American friend that really helped them to understand, for example, how to bike. First time in their life they started to bike, and the American friend, she's a part of this biking coalition. And she really helped them to get helmets, their free bikes, and also teaching them how to bike here. So it's actually empowered the family to be more able to go wherever they need instead of waiting for the buses or using the transportation. It is also good environmentally. So this is just kind of teaching also people to how we have to preserve our environment, living in a green zone, green kind of place. And at the same time, you know, they've been learning a lot about America. Same things the American friends were telling us, how she's happy to know these people. She has able to open her heart for these people who is really in need. And it makes her life is more meaningful. Hmm. And that's amazing. I think this is just something we have to understand. This is just, we cannot even kind of give this like price for that. It's a priceless experience.
It's a wonderful opportunity for enrichment.
Yes.
How have you gone about finding these 15 families that are local native-born Mainers to partner with these immigrants?
So we actually have our, of course, website. And on website, we posting our openings for any volunteering, and specifically for American friends. Through our connections, through the community event, we also kind of announcing that, or in the church, in a parish, you know, different kind of event we always promote it, and there is a lot of people love to come.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity. I know so many families who say, oh, I want to volunteer with my kids, and I'm not sure, beyond a soup kitchen, they don't have a lot of ideas sometimes. And here's mm-hmm. a way, meet up with another family, have a huge cultural exchange.
Yes.
It's called and American Friends Program.
And it's, you know, it's the whole program is like about 6 months that you are, and at least once in a week you have to meet with your families. But what we see, it's actually people become so close to each other and they stay forever. So there is the beyond of 6 months. I have a guy just been amazed by that experience that they have. So about 7 or 8 years ago, there was a Vietnamese refugee, elderly man came here. He was about 72 years old, has no family here. And I was one of these case managers who was resettling him that time. So we were able to match him with one elderly American man, and then they become so close to each other. So up to now, they are kind of meeting each other every week. He helps them to go for groceries, and they're just playing some chess and, you know, just chatting. And, you know, even with this broken English that this Vietnamese refugee, older man, he's now about 79 years old, he speaks with this American friend, and they're enjoying their life. And I'm just amazed by that how this possible, two people from different nations, they find themselves in Portland, in a small, you know, town in the northeast of America, and how they can exchange their love and respect to each other. Mm-hmm. And what he told me, both of them actually told, that so many similarities than we think about differences. So both of them, they have the same vision about elderly, you know, the respect to elders and being a responsible citizen. Actually, this Vietnamese guy now become a citizen of America. And this American friend who was helping him for a long time, actually helped him with the preparation for these 100 questions to pass this exam. So it's just amazing.
That's beautiful. It's like a friendlymatch.com.
Yes.
Through Catholic Charities.
Yes.
Who would have guessed it?
And I hope our today talk show would also encourage other people to apply for this or being interested in that program. So we will be more than happy to match them, but they have to go through screening for backgrounds and go through the trainings, because we have to make sure that people train before they can start the whole being a part of the program.
And you mentioned to me earlier, it is not expected that you do social work with this family. You are actually just giving emotional support sometimes,
exactly.
You know, or explaining that little goblins are going to be knocking on your door on October 31st,
yeah.
Right? And things like that can be very helpful when you're acclimating to a new culture.
Yes, it's not case management at all. It is not. It's just cultural exchange, same like you have your neighbor maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So how you would, you know, live with your neighbor, being, you know, helpful to each other. Here you are more active, teaching them about your culture and customs.
Great.
So Thanksgiving and, you know, so many other. And another program would you like?
Well, we're running a little short on time.
Okay.
I want to say that American Friends and the mentoring program are similar, aren't they?
Yes.
Say a couple words about the mentoring program.
So the mentoring program is it's meant to help adult youth between 19 to 27 or 30 years old refugees or doesn't matter, asylees, helping them to reintegrate fully to the life of socio. So being not only working in these basic works that we're really helping them in the beginning to get, but something that they can look at the life in America as a very something that they can prosper here through their education and career ladder. So that's why we need the mentors to help them to understand educational system in America, how to get the better jobs, how to learn, how to recreate their already transferable skills from their country. So we have been really kind of championing in that. And in city, we don't have any similar mentoring program for this population. We have so many different, you know, like
it's
in schools.
It's a lonely time. If you don't come with a family, you're not entering into the school systems. If you're between 17 and 30, you may just be working and very lonely.
Yes, exactly. And so the mentoring program was really very doing well. And so since 2013, we were able to match 56 people. I mean, it's really beautiful, you know. So 56 individuals will have a new hope for their life.
It's a wonderful way to become involved in the community. Really meeting all your new neighbors.
Thank you.
Are doing a fabulous job with that.
Thanks.
If listeners are interested in volunteering with either of these programs and they want to learn more, of course, there's ccmaine.org, and you can look up the Refugee Immigration Services. And I will make a link to that on newmainerspeak.com website on our resources page as well. Tarlan, you are such a warm person, and you're doing such meaningful and important work in the city here for so many of the most vulnerable people in our state. Thank you for coming on the show today and sharing some of your background and your work with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, and I'm really happy to be here. And thank you for your invitation, and you make our life something different, you know, that you allow us to share our values, our, you know, thoughts with other people.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And the other people out there that I've heard from are just delighted to hear your stories. It's a wonderful way to get to know.
Thank you so much.
All the new people in our community. And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest Tarlan Amadov. You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. We will close today's program with some music that Tarlan has chosen for us. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Tarlan?
So this is mystic music from Azerbaijan called Muham, and it will be done by the famous Pervez Ali Kramoglu on balaban or duduk. So they call the Sega Muhami.
Thank you. Hope you enjoy it.
Thank you.
¶¶